Chapter 2. My avatar materialized in front of my locker on the second floor of my high school, the exact spot where I'd been standing when I'd logged out the night before. I glanced up and down the hallway. My virtual surroundings looked almost, but not quite, real. Everything inside the Oasis was beautifully rendered in three dimensions. Unless you pulled focus and stopped to examine your surroundings more closely, it was easy to forget that everything you were seeing was computer-generated. And that was with my crappy school-issued Oasis console. I'd heard that if you accessed the simulation with a new, state-of-the-art immersion rig, it was almost impossible to tell the Oasis from reality. I touched my locker door, and it popped open with a soft metallic click. The inside was sparsely decorated. A picture of Princess Leia posing with a blaster pistol, a group photo of the members of Monty Python in their Holy Grail costumes, James Halliday's Time magazine cover. I reached up and tapped the stack of textbooks on the locker's top shelf, and they vanished, then reappeared in my avatar's item inventory. Aside from my textbooks, my avatar had only a few meager possessions: a flashlight, an iron short sword, a small bronze shield, and a suit of banded leather armor. These items were all non-magical and of low quality, but they were the best I could afford. Items in the Oasis had just as much value as things in the real world, sometimes more, and you couldn't pay for them with food vouchers. The Oasis credit was the coin of the realm, and in these dark times, it was also one of the world's most stable currencies, valued higher than the dollar, pound, euro, or yen. A small mirror was mounted inside my locker door, and I caught a glimpse of my virtual self as I closed it. I'd designed my avatar's face and body to look more or less like my own. My avatar had a slightly smaller nose than me, and he was taller. And thinner. And more muscular. And he didn't have any teenage acne. But, aside from these minor details, we looked more or less identical. The school's strictly enforced dress code required that all student avatars be human and of the same gender and age as the student. No giant two-headed hermaphrodite demon unicorn avatars were allowed. Not on school grounds, anyway. You could give your Oasis avatar any name you liked as long as it was unique, meaning you had to pick a name that hadn't already been taken by someone else. Your avatar's name was also your email address and chat ID, so you wanted it to be cool and easy to remember. Celebrities had been known to pay huge sums of money to buy an avatar name they wanted from a cyber squatter who had already reserved it. When I'd first created my Oasis account, I'd named my avatar Wade_the_great. After that, I kept changing it every few months, usually to something equally ridiculous. But my avatar had now had the same name for over 5 years. On the day the hunt began, the day I'd decided to become a Gunter, I'd renamed my avatar Parzival, after the knight of Arthurian legend who had found the Holy Grail. The other more common spellings of that knight's name, Percival, and Percival, had already been taken by other users. But I preferred the name Parzival anyway. I thought it had a nice ring to it. People rarely used their real names online. Anonymity was one of the major perks of the Oasis. Inside the simulation, no one knew who you really were unless you wanted them to. Much of the Oasis's popularity and culture were built around this fact. Your real name, fingerprints, and retinal patterns were stored in your Oasis account, but gregarious simulation systems kept that information encrypted and confidential. Even GSS's own employees couldn't look up an avatar's true identity. Back when Halliday was still running the company, GSS had won the right to keep every Oasis user's identity private in a landmark Supreme Court ruling.